a tremendous Thursday to you. What's going on? How are we all living? How is your day going? Nice to have you here. I'm Jim Rome. We start our second hour. We've already hit on some college football in hour number one, specifically SEC football. And I'm going to continue that part of the conversation in a moment. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I mentioned in hour number one, we did talk some college ball. We had the head coach of Indiana on, Tom Allen. And we talked about the year they had. The Hoosiers had a really nice year last year. Got to a bowl game and had a couple of really good opportunities for some big wins. And nonetheless, had a big year. They open up against Penn State. In fact, we continue the conversation right now about college football. I'm joined by a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1. Also a national college football insider for The Athletic. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He's got a new book out. It's called Flip the Script with Ed Orgeron. Flip the Script comes out on October 27th. It is available for pre-order right now. My guest is Bruce Feldman. Bruce, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So, Bruce, normally when you and I are talking 2 days before number three Georgia going up against number two Alabama, we'd be all about that matchup, which I'll get to in a minute, but obviously there is bigger news. What was your reaction, Bruce, to the news that Nick Saban tested positive for COVID?
You know, it's a little surreal, Jim. He's certainly not the first college football coach who has tested positive, but he's the biggest coach and the biggest name in college football. It's also when word got out, it wasn't just him. It was also the Alabama AD, Greg Byrne, who had also tested positive. Now, Saban, I was on a call with him probably an hour after that, and he had explained he has no symptoms at this point. And it's just, you know, he's one of those guys where whenever you've seen him, he's been very proactive in terms of the messaging. He's seemingly always had a mask on where, you know, you've seen plenty of highlights of coaches during games where they haven't, or it looks like it's, you know, down around their neck or whatever. They're wearing it like a satchel or something. He's not been that way. So, you know, when we talked to him after yesterday, one of the things that I think he is very mindful of is just, hey, you know what, the virus is basically all around us, and it's something where you have to be extra careful. And I think fortunately for Alabama, they're one of the few programs right now who is testing daily, so they caught this. Some other programs are testing 3 times a week. Some other programs are only testing 1 day a week. And so what has happened quite a bit has been this virus has spread pretty quickly through some of these programs because either they go on a road trip and they're in a cramped visitor's locker room or they're at a team meal or whatnot. It's just that's been one of the challenges with this. So fortunately for Alabama, it appears they were able to catch it very quickly. And as soon as Saban found out he got the positive test, he went home and he actually tried to coach the practice as best he could from home.
Right. Bruce Feldman joining us. He did do that, Bruce. Now, he does make the point that he's not playing in that game, but at the same time, we know he's an enormous presence. So what do you think it's going to be like to have Alabama playing in a huge game Saturday night without Nick Saban on the sideline? How much do you think that will impact the game?
I think it's definitely going to have some impact just in terms of you're talking about the players who are so used to this guy who is such a dominating presence in everything that goes on with Alabama football. And it's really not just the players. It's this big staff they've had where he's involved in every decision. Now, you know, you can take a look. Les Miles, the coach at Kansas, another national title-winning coach, he also has tested positive for COVID. Maybe he will be back on the sidelines this week or not when they play West Virginia. Les Miles is not as hands-on the way running a football program, especially in-game, the way Nick Saban is. One of the only coaches I can think of who maybe every bit is connected to it in a lot of facets of the game is TCU's Gary Patterson. So, look, what I was told by people close to Saban is that he has the utmost confidence in Steve Sarkisian, and Sarkisian has a leadership presence to him. I think he has obviously a bunch of experience from his time at Washington and some at USC in some big games, but he's certainly not Nick Saban. And so that's a significant deal, and we'll see how it plays out. Because of the NCAA rules, he is not permitted, if you're not in the building, if you're not in the stadium, if you're not in the coach's press box. You cannot really have communication, you know, from the time basically the game is going to start. So it's going to be a big adjustment, not just for the players, but for everybody on that Alabama sideline.
We're talking about that matchup on Saturday night. Bruce Feldman is joining us. And the matchup, Bruce, is really interesting on a number of different levels, but especially when you consider the two starting quarterbacks. You've got Georgia's Stetson Bennett. You've got Alabama's Mac Jones. Right now, you've got a great piece up on The Athletic about Shannon Dawson and his connection to both players. For those who do not know, who is Dawson and how is he connected to them?
Well, Dawson's actually the offensive coordinator at University of Houston, but what's fascinating is he was the first one to really buy in, at least in college coaching, to either guy. He was the one who Mac Jones had committed to as a junior when Dawson was the offensive coordinator at Kentucky. You know, Dawson had first seen him when he was in eighth grade, and the kid came up to a camp at West Virginia and threw for him. That's where Dawson worked at the time. And then after he left Kentucky, he goes to Southern Miss and he sees this 5'10 quarterback who he gets somebody, a friend sends him film of. And he just thinks, man, this guy is special. He's got some Baker Mayfield in him. Loved how he threw the ball. Loved how accurate he was. When the kid came to visit, he saw how big his hands were. He measured him. He was like, that's something I really think is important for quarterbacks. But his head coach would not offer him. So he was like, I had to try to get him to walk on. This kid grew up going to Georgia games. So when they gave him a chance to walk on, he was like, as much as I tried to tell him, Stetson Bennett, and his dad, say, hey, you know what? They're always going to have a five-star kid. You're not going to play there. And he goes, and I think you're a good player. It's going to be sad. Well, you know, eventually this kid was at one point the four-string quarterback. But for a variety of things that have happened, he got his chance to play, and he has excelled at it. And so you have these two quarterbacks, neither guy, because remember, obviously, Mac Jones, when he signed with Alabama, the other quarterback who signed that year was Tua. So it wasn't like everybody was expecting Mac Jones to be this guy going to take over the program. And then they take Bryce Young from out here, another five-star kid from modern day. I think a lot of people thought he was going to be the guy. So credit to Mac Jones, credit to Stetson Bennett. For believing in their ability enough and just staying true when a lot of other people thought it wasn't going to happen.
Bruce Feldman joining us. All right then, Bruce, who do you like on Saturday and why?
You know, before the Saban news, I picked Alabama. I think Georgia's defense has looked really good. They're talented. I think Stetson Bennett has played really well. He's got some playmaker savvy in him. But having said all that, the game's in Tuscaloosa. To me, Alabama has the best receiving core in college football. They also have Najee Harris, who's a tremendous running back. I think Alabama is much better in the skill position right now than Georgia is. I know their defense looked really shaky, and Lane Kiffin's, you know, Ole Miss offense really gave them fits. But I just think that it's a big game, even without Nick Saban. I think it's going to be really hard for Georgia to slow down this offense. I just think it's just too explosive, especially the way the run game complements those receivers who are so dynamic. I mean, Georgia's good on defense, but I don't see anybody slowing down this Alabama offense.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman. All right, Bruce, I mentioned off the very top that you've got a brand new book coming out with Ed Orgeron. It's called Flip the Script. You and Coach O go back quite a bit. When did you first meet him, and what do you remember about that?
It was actually, I had moved out to California, and this was back in the Matt Leinart, the USC days under Pete Carroll. And I was working at ESPN Magazine at the time, and they had a really good defensive line. And it was a bunch of guys who had become, you know, high-round NFL draft picks. And Orgeron was the head coach, was the defensive line coach at USC and really the recruiting coordinator. And just, you know, you hear all these amazing stories about him and just a larger-than-life character. And so I kind of connected with him there for an ESPN Magazine story on that group. It was Sean Cody, Mike Patterson, Kenichi Udizi. I mean, this was a really talented group. And they were really part of the foundation of what Pete Carroll got built there at USC and ended up obviously winning national titles. And so from there, I did a book really about recruiting where it was a fly on the wall in the Ole Miss football office when he was the head coach there, called Meat Market. And Jim, I'd always get asked, the book did quite well, and it was just a unique story. And he's a unique figure. And so I'd always got asked, would you ever do a sequel to Meat Market? And I just didn't think that was really possible. But then once he got the LSU job, and you'd see both from his time as the interim at USC, but even how he's had to really grow and learn from all the mistakes, not only the mistakes that he made, especially at Ole Miss, certainly the mistakes that he saw Lane make when Lane was the head coach and he was with him at USC. And just to see that evolution and to see then how they go on this remarkable run and go 15-0 and you know, they have Joe Burrow and Joe Brady and all these pieces come together. I just thought it was an amazing story. So this is basically the sequel to Meat Market.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman. It is an amazing story, and that was a great book in and of itself. Let me ask you this, Bruce, before you go. The 2017 season at LSU started with wins over BYU and Chattanooga, and then there was a blowout loss to Mississippi State, then a win over Syracuse, and then the embarrassing loss at home to Troy. What kind of an impact did that loss have on Coach O and the program?
Jim, I think what's interesting there is you sit there and you think, okay, he's won the locker room over, because you knew when he became the interim, taking over for Les Miles, how hard they played for him in 2016. But the next year, as you say, it was really rocky. And I think one thing that, you know, I kind of learned from working on this book was how different a locker room can be and a team can be from year to year. And it was fascinating to hear him talk about, there was after they lose to Troy, and he was like, you know, you kind of feel like you're on the ropes and you're, you know the pressure's mounting on you because the expectations are so high. And he told me this story where he had a former player, Duke Riley, who was a really good linebacker for him, who was a rookie with the Falcons. And the Falcons happened to be on a bye week. And so Duke Riley came back to visit the team, and Ogeron said, hey, do you want to speak to the team? And he said, let me just hang out for a little bit. So Riley spent basically the next day and a half just observing. He noticed that, you know, guys didn't pick up their trays or how they treated people in the cafeteria workers, or maybe leave some trash around or didn't hustle. All these things that he had noted. And at one point, Riley then said to him after practice, hey, I'm ready to speak. And all these players thought, hey, here's Duke Riley, the team captain, coming back. He's our guy, you know, and everything. And Duke Riley lights into this team. And Ogeron said it was probably as powerful a speech as he's ever seen of a team he's been with. And in a lot of ways, he said, Duke Riley said a lot of the stuff that at that point, if I had said the same things and called him out the way Duke did, I think I might have lost that team. Because just the messaging at that point of the leadership and that delicate balance, it was fascinating because they went on to get a big win at Florida on the road and were able to really build some momentum. And that really laid the foundation for what became the national title that run they went on last year.
See, that really is an amazing story in and of itself. So, Bruce, finally then, like, what was his process? How exactly did Coach O go about flipping the script?
Jim, I think what's really key on that was, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, look, we all have flaws. His, I think, everyone kind of could see, and he's not, there's no poker face there, a big, emotional, high-energy guy. But also, he'd come through the process of battling addiction, which, you know, he will talk a little bit about in the book. I mean, he's now 20 years sober. But I think the lessons that come with that and the realization of you got to really have an honest, hard look at yourself and your flaws. And yeah, there could be other things that could be, you know, going on around you that you may think are less than ideal, but you got to start with yourself. And I think because of that, he has really been able to evolve in ways that a lot of coaches, especially when they get into their 50s, just they're kind of too set in their ways and too stubborn. And I think because he's always evolved, he's found ways to be very innovative. And I think a lot of times we think of innovators in football as Lincoln Riley as an X and O's guy, or, you know, what Bill Belichick may do, or certain guys, you know, just from a scheme standpoint. I think where he's been very innovative in the ways he gets the team ready for Saturday. And so we go into a lot of detail in the book on certain things that he's done where he's like, you know, I know it's always been done that way, but I'm not doing it that way because I know my team and I know what I think works best. And I think what's helped him is to have the trust of the team. And look, last year he had a unique dynamic because it was like having a player coach to have Joe Burrow out there because they had such a bond. And I think that gave him so much more of a trust factor. And so I think that was kind of why they went on this magical run. And I think all that stuff kind of comes from knowing who you are and knowing, you know, having the trust in not just what you're doing, but what everyone else is around you. And again, I think that comes from the unique perspective of just having to be so brutally honest with yourself the way he's had to be.
This book is called Flip the Script. It's coming out on October 27th, but it's available for pre-order right now. The author is Bruce Feldman, a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, and also a now National College Football Insider for The Athletic. Bruce, good stuff as always. Thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing that book out there, and I know we'll do it again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
Great job, Bruce. Well done. Good information. So, you get your matchup, Georgia and Bama. Who do you like, and how much does this change if Nick Saban's not going to be there? Because, as he points out, Nick Saban's one of those guys who's got a say in literally every single thing, every little detail, every decision. He's hands-on. So, they've got a lot of skill. They've got a good staff. They've got that game at home, but he's not going to be there. How different is that going to be? What kind of an impact might that have on that game? And I thought the conversation about Ed Orgeron also was really interesting. We are open all the way now until 11:40 Pacific time, 2:40 Eastern. Ross Tucker will be joining me in the final segment of the program. So we are wide open. 1-800-636-8686. The Dodgers get a big win last night. That game was over before Atlanta even picked up their bats. Literally. 2-1 Braves up on the Dodgers, and you've got Clayton Kershaw going to the pump for game 4. Now what? Win tonight, and we've got ourselves a series. Except, Dodger fan, it's not like it's only 2-1, as I mentioned before. When teams lose the first 2 games in a best-of-7 series, they lose that series 85% of the time. When teams lose the first 2 games of the NLCS, nobody has come back in 35 years. So it's not just a matter of you're down 2-1, you're in a pretty good spot. You will be if you handle your business tonight. Is Kershaw going to handle his business tonight? He best do so. He's going up against a guy who's got 42 innings of Major League Baseball experience. Got to get it done. Has to get it done tonight. That, the ALCS, Conor McGregor, and more. Plus your phone call. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, welcome back. My thanks to Bruce Feldman. Talk some pro football. Ross Tucker joining me next hour. There is no Thursday night game. So you're clear tonight, but you've got baseball. And we've got some MMA, some UFC. I know you've heard this before. And it's become somewhat of an eye roll for a lot of people. I've already seen your reaction to it when I teased it. But I think that we may actually have an actual, legitimate Conor McGregor fight.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker! The king is back!
Man, I hear that guy's voice, I hear that sound drop, and I think, man, I hope that's true. Surprise, surprise, mother bleeper, the king is back.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker, the king is back.
Except it's been a minute or two since the king has been the king. So, do we have a legit Conor McGregor fight? A legit Conor McGregor UFC bout? It would appear so. Like a real fight. An actual MMA fister. And not some bleep around boxing match against some former legendary boxer past his prime. Or some exhibition that was made up for Conor with some rules to benefit Conor. No, I'm talking about an actual UFC sanctioned fight where fist and foot and elbow and everything else are going to be applied to each other's faces and heads. In what appears to be a response to Dana White telling ESPN's Brett Okamoto that he could not make a fight happen for Conor this year. And that if Conor wanted to fight, it was going to have to be in early 2021. And probably against Dustin Poirier. Essentially, Conor, if you want that fight, take it or leave it. And Conor apparently wants the fight. Conor tweeted yesterday, quote, "I accept. January 23rd is on. My goal is to see this fight take place in Cowboy Stadium. Proper style. Jerry Jones is a friend, and the stadium can hold our crowd. I will be ready for Texas, and Texas will be ready for my fans. Then Manny." Hashtag McGregor Sports and Entertainment. All right, so Conor apparently is going to take this fight. Reportedly, there's not paper on the fight yet, but that's a verbal agreement. So apparently he's not as bored as he was back in June when he retired again. And listen, there is a lot to unpack in that tweet. Some of that tweet I love, some of that I do not. First, in terms of the fight with Dustin, love that. Love that fight.
I love him.
I do love him.
I love him.
Stylistically, this fight can be amazing. You've got a couple of dudes with electric stand-up games who both will stand in and exchange blows at high levels. Warriors. Warriors. And yes, for those who follow the sport, you know this. And I know this as well. They did fight back in 2014. I saw what Conor did to Dustin back in 2014. But make no mistake, this is not the same time. And this is not the same guy. Dustin is a bad man. A bad dude. How bad? Check out a rundown of his last six fights. And another reason why I love the UFC. The best fight the best. Look at this guy's last six fights alone. Anthony Pettis, former UFC champ. He submitted him. Justin Gaethje, maybe the most electric fighter in the entire sport right now. Dustin iced him.
Ice.
Eddie Alvarez, classy former UFC champ. Dustin iced him.
Ice.
Max Holloway, former UFC champ and a future Hall of Famer. And Dustin beat him for a belt, handily. Habib. Well, we know what happens against Habib. Nobody wins that fight. But Dustin's last time out, many of you saw it because that was in June when the UFC had the sports world eyes. All of the eyes were on them. A legendary brawl against Dan Hooker. A brawl where Dustin out-hearted, out-punched, and out-gutted Hooker. A war. If anybody saw that, then you would know what to expect with Dustin and Conor. So, for you, if you're wondering if this is, in fact, a legitimate fight for Conor, if they'll go fist to face, if that's what you're going to get, the answer is hell freaking yes. If Nate Diaz were here, and I were to say, hey, Nate, man, shoot me straight. What do you think about this matchup? I can almost guarantee that Nate's response would be, and I quote, what up, Nate? I love Nate. I've never spoken to Nate, and I love Nate. Hey, Nate. All right, so that's the good part of the tweet. Like I said, there's a lot of good in that tweet. Oh, one more thing about that tweet. That's the good part. Now the annoying part of that tweet. Conor tagging that tweet with, quote, then Manny. Yeah, no thanks. For real, Conor. Outside of you, Emmanuel, and one Alvin DeLauro, nobody wants to see that fight. No one. No one. Seriously, you are way too talented to be wasting your time bleeping around in another boxing match. I mean, I know you're looking for the quick check, but are you a gladiator or a check casher now, Conor? Come on, man. Not even the so-called fanboy bitches want to see this.
You little fanboy bitch.
They don't even want to see it. They want to see Conor McGregor, the great mixed martial arts fighter, the gladiator who took that sport by storm like nobody ever had before. They want to see the guy who could talk generational smack, whose mental warfare was so mind-bleepingly next level. It could get under his opponent's skin, into their heads, and it affected how they fought when they got in the cage, how they even trained. And then you could run the most insane smack ever, and then, incredibly enough, go out there and back it up. You were the biggest thing in the world, literally. One of the biggest things ever. My question is, where is that guy? What happened to that guy? Does that guy still exist? Or is that guy dead and gone? Because that guy did put 100 mil in the bank. And as Dana White has said, once you have 100 mil in your bank, you may not want to continue to do those things that put that money in the bank in the first place. You may not want to wake up every single morning, punch the clock by getting punched in the face all day long. Who wants to punch the clock?
The clock.
when punching the clock means getting punched in the face all day long. Yeah, it's one thing when you're a plumber's apprentice and you've got nothing. But when you've got $100 million in the bank or something close to it, you may not want to roll out early in the morning, punch the clock.
The clock.
And then get punched in the face for a living. I get that. I understand that. I just want to know if you're still that guy. In other words, are you still that gladiator? Or are you a check casher? They want to see you fight Dustin. Then maybe Habib or Justin Gaethje or Tony Ferguson or even my guy Nate again. By the way, I would pay a lot of money to watch you fight Jorge even. But I'm not going to pay a cent to watch you box Manny Pacquiao.
Dude, no.
Hell, you couldn't pay me to watch you box Manny Pacquiao.
Dude, no.
Hey, Connor, I understand that apologizing is not your thing. But I think that maybe you need to say you're sorry to everybody to continue or for continuing to float this crap out into the world.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely
everybody.
The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
Yeah, but you're no longer the double champ. My man, fight Dustin. If you win that fight, and that's no guarantee either. If you win that fight, move up the competition ladder, continue to reestablish yourself, challenge yourself, but whatever you do, man, just please be done with all this boxing nonsense. I'd rather watch Manny sing to his dad than the two of you try to make sweet music together in the ring.
And sometimes when we touch, the honesty is too much.
Because that's not going to make anybody happy other than you, him, Alvin, and a few bankers. And Manny's dad.
Dude, no.
Even if Manny's dad did unthinkable things to the family dog. I mean, just come on. You do your thing. Let Manny do his thing. Connor, man. I mean, I'm coming from a place of respect and admiration, man. I miss you, dude. I miss you very much. I miss that guy. Max yourself out in the octagon. You're not getting any younger. And Dustin is still really dangerous. And he's not that guy that you iced in 2014. This is a good, good challenge. A great start. A great first step back to being that guy. Come on now. 1-800-636-8686. Where do you come out on this? How do you think that fight's going to go? Do you trust Connor to still be Connor? Or is that guy dead and gone and not coming back? Or do you actually want to see him fight Manny Pacquiao?
Dude, no.
I'd rather see Manny. I'd rather see and listen to Manny serenade his father.
And sometimes when we touch.
I remember when they tried to position that as a Father's Day gift. Manny singing to his dad sometimes when we touch. Man, my father, who never laid a hand on me, if I ever did that to him back in the day, he would have gone upside my head probably with that. What the hell kind of Father's Day gift is this? If either Logan and or Jake ever rolled up on me with something like that, I'd be like, man, get the hell out of here with that. Oh, Alvin's in. Alvin is in from home. Ha, 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 boss. I'd rather talk to Elisa from customer service for an hour than watch that fight. Attaboy, Alvy. Hey, Alvy, is that an example of you punching the clock?
The clock.
With one G-chat message from your home on a Thursday. Come on, Alvin. Alvin, I know, speaking of clock, I know your alarm clock went off like 5 minutes ago, Alvin. I know it did. That's a dog. Did you get that, Alvin? That's Rit finding the dog sound. Because that's Manny's dog. Because as that terrible, terrible, terrible story goes, the old man did unthinkable things to the family dog. I'm not even going to get into that. You can look it up if you want. Google Pacquiao family dog. Or you know what? Don't. Hey, Rit, you really are settling in, aren't you? coming off that award-winning performance yesterday. All right. I think on that note, I have not had another conversation with Elisa since our first conversation where she said, hey, I'm waiting. Just give me your phone number and we can settle up the whatever dispute we have with you. I said, all right, Elisa, I got that. I'll get right to that. And I haven't, and I won't. When we return, I mentioned I'm open phones until 11:40 Pacific time, at which point Ross Tucker comes in. In addition to that, I want to talk about the conversation I had with Buzz Williams for my podcast. Really good talk. Buzz dropped some serious knowledge. I can't wait to get to that. ALCS, you may hate the Astros. They live to fight another day. I've got that for you, too. It's good to talk some UFC. Conor McGregor, man, I hope he comes back. The thing about Conor McGregor is he was the biggest thing in that sport. And for a time, he was the biggest thing in all sports. But he's not bigger than that sport. Like, Dana White's fine. UFC's fine. It's better and bigger when Conor is doing those types of things. But they don't need him. He still needs them more than they need him. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. And not just any sports update, but one anchored by the icon that is Rich Ackerman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
But see, you got a pretty good sense right now what I bring to this thing, right? What the XR4TI brings to this thing, right? Every single day. Now I'm trying to get a sense of exactly what you bring to it. Let's find out. Romy. Lay off the plumber's apprentice. Regards, Matt in L.A. barehanding a deuce out of a commode. Geoff in Lincoln.
Then holla at your boy. You know where to find me. Down on my knees, neck deep in some toilet I'm having to unclog because some Delta Bravo frat boy jammed a big old turd in the pipes. Aloha means a hola, as in, I got a whole lot of toilets to clean up.
That's not Matt. It did sound like him, though, for a minute, didn't it? Yeah, going back to Conor McGregor, he literally had nothing. Man, this guy was living on food stamps. He was a plumber's apprentice. And Dana White tells that great story about when he first met Conor, and he just knew right then and there, like, this guy's different. This guy's got this crazy, crazy amount of it, and man, he's fierce, and he's hungry, of course. I mean, he probably was literally hungry. He had nothing. So to see Conor become like the biggest thing in the world. And then there's just certain moments, right, in that sport. That sport provides certain moments that you can never get in any other sport. But in all my years of doing this, and in all my years of covering sport, in all my years of talking to athletes, interviewing athletes, and seeing these big moments on the big stage, him icing Jose Aldo the way he did was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. Given that Aldo hadn't lost in a decade, and Conor was just talking all that junk, and it clearly had gotten in Aldo's head and under his skin. And they sprint to the center of the cage, and he just iced that guy.
Ice!
I mean, absolutely amazing. But is he still that guy? Mike D for three tweets. I would have happily taken a song. Signed, Mr. Menendez.
And sometimes when we touch, the honesty is too much.
That's pretty fresh. A Menendez reset. They shotgunned their parents in cold blood because they wanted the money. And that's show fodder? You know what I would say to that? Still too soon. Decades out, that will still be too soon. Rome, how about your old man and the family cat, Romy? Glass houses. War Lindor playing in Cleveland for life, Joe in C-Town. All right, so now if you're going to take a run at me like that and try to call me a hypocrite or say that I live in a glass house, at least get the story right. It wasn't my old man and the cat. It was my sister and the cat. The old man didn't do anything to any of our cats. Unfortunately, there was a very traumatic experience with one of the family cats. But that involved my sister, not my dad. Rome, McGregor's UFC career is deader than Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks went belly up as well.
Signed Ritt. That was Ritt yesterday. We told Ritt as part of a birthday present to him. Remember, Ritt has the same birthday that I have. Ritt looks exactly like Dwight Eisenhower. Dwight Eisenhower has the same birthday that Ritt and I have. As a present to Ritt on his birthday, which also happens to be my birthday, I said, you can host this show for one segment. And when I say host the show, what I mean is not me talking back and forth to you across the glass, but you and I are going to change seats. You can sit in my chair, I will sit in your chair, and you can do whatever the hell you want for a segment. Rant. I mean, you know the show, you know the format. Come in here, Ritt. You think you can do better than me? Prove it. Show me. So Ritt just starts going off half-cocked about things like Tom Hanks being dead. Okay, Ritt, here's one problem. As part of the host duties, you need to say things that are factually sound. Tom Hanks is not dead.
Tom Hanks went belly up as well.
He did not go belly up. He did test positive early on back in the day along with Rita, but they're fine. 1-for-3, C1. I am still available to fight Connor. Sign Cal in Vegas.
Next time you fly to Las Vegas, I'll be waiting for you at the airport. Then I'm going to rip that beard off your face.
And make you eat it.
Make you eat it.
That hasn't happened yet. So yesterday, I was thinking about my birthday. This is really, I'm not proud of this story, but this is actually a true story. I've been going around, I haven't been thinking about it too much lately, and somebody said, yo man, how old are you? And I hadn't really thought about it because I just don't think about it. And then I got this number in my head, and then I did the math. I'm like, dad, that's not how old I am. I actually bought myself another year. Yeah, you should do this, Ritt. I woke up in the morning like, hey man, I actually got a free year. I've been telling everybody I'm this old, but I'm really not that old. I'm a year, like, I can't do the math. So that's amazing. Like, I bought myself a year. I got a free year, and it feels real. Like, hell yeah. Okay, three, I got a fresh, it's like a fresh 24 on the shot clock, but it's a fresh 365 on the shot clock. What am I going to do with that 365? That feels pretty damn good. I mean, like, life is a mind game. And either you play that game or you get played. I did both. Do the math. I guess I was too busy doing the Alfredo. Then I did the math and I got 365 free days out of it.
Bring it on.
I am, man. I am just going to keep telling myself I'm 35. Maybe, believe me, try this. If you tell yourself anything long enough, you will believe it. Believe that. Mike D for three. Surprise, surprise, mother bleepers. The Fling is back. Signed, Polygamous.
Surprise, surprise, mother f***er. The King is back.
Hawk, are you screening these? We've had a deuce in the commode. We've had Polygamous smack. Idiot. Hawk, you like them, don't you? Because soon you're going to be one of them. And what I mean by them is I mean the clones. And what I mean by soon, I mean before the end of this hour. Dude, you keep bringing me crap like that from them. You will soon be one of them. And then you can tweet the show all you want. Carlin Prescott, wore the Jim Rome family dog Holocaust. Yeah, because that's something you want to war. We lost all of our dogs at once. All three family dogs. I'm still not right. One of the saddest things ever. But you're going to war that. But then again, you're making jokes about the Menendez family, so you probably do think that's funny. It's all fun and games until it happens to your dog or dogs. Ask Manny. Come on, man. NLCS. Can we just keep this train on the tracks? Oh, and by the way, if you're waiting, do not try to cross the tracks. Trains can't stop. The NLCS is on to Game 4. Clayton Kershaw is going to get his start in Game 4. It was a scheduled Game 2 start. He had back spasms. He couldn't go. They lost. And now he's going to get a start. You like that, James Kelly? You like that? What kind of signs are you putting up for me now? All right, let's go to the phones. I'm trying to read the B team across the glass. James Kelly just did this to me. He held up this. I'm like, dude, are you piecing out to the host? What is that? Or is that a deuce in the commode? Or is that line two? Come on, big head. Use your words, dude. Use your words. Let's go to Philadelphia. Connor in Philadelphia. Connor, it's good to have you. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Big fan. Got a question for you.
Yes.
Wondering, who would win in a fight? Conor McGregor and the old man he punched at the bar? Or Manny Pacquiao and the childhood dog?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Yeah, that was not a very good call, Connor. Nor you, James Kelly, who screened that out. Like I said, James Kelly is holding up this sign. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, that's Kelly. That's me. He's holding up a peace sign. And again, I don't know what that means. Does that mean peace out? I quit? Does that mean pick up line two? Or does that mean deuces, boss? James Kelly. We may or may not have his picks tomorrow. The big head picks. I've got Ross Tucker coming up next hour. Sadly, an open segment next. I do want to hit the ALCS. My thoughts on that next segment.